Okay, thank you. And good afternoon, everybody. And we wanted to give you an update as to how we're progressing with the post-implementation review of IFRS 3 on business combinations. I know we've spoken to you before earlier in the cycle, but we're now sort of quite a way through the process. The request for information was published back in January and has been out for comment until the end of May. And so we're just at the stage where we're starting to get the comment letters in, or we've had a lot of them in, but there's still a few more to come through. But also we've been also participating in a number of meetings during the outreach period. And so what we thought we'd do for you at this stage in the process is to give you an overview as to what we've been hearing during that outreach phase. And so Leo's going to take you through that.
Thank you, Michael. Good afternoon, everybody. Yes, as anticipated by Michael, I will provide you a quick summary of the feedback received during the outreach activity. We can start from slide number six. Slide number six relates to the definition of a business. This is the first issue that we have included in the request for information, because sometimes it's difficult to understand whether a transaction is a business combination or an asset acquisition. In these slides, there is a summary of the feedback that we received. In particular, we can say that some think that we should provide more guidance on the definition of a business or try to improve the definition of a business. Others think that we should try to eliminate or reduce the accounting differences between an asset acquisition or a business combination. If you have any questions, please stop me. The next slide relates to fair value measurements. We can say that IFRS 3 is based on fair value. The asset acquired and the liability assumed in a business combination are measured at a fair value. And we ask users about the usefulness of this information. I have to say that the majority of them think that fair value provides useful information. However, some think that fair value is not perfect because, for example, can decrease the profitability for inventory because the inventory is measured at fair value and not at cost. Also, they don't like fair value because they think that they cannot compare entities that grow organically with entities that grow through business combinations. In slide 8, we provide a summary of the comment received on the separate recognition of intangible assets from goodwill, in particular on the intangible assets that usually are not recognized in financial statements, such as customer list or internally generated brand names. We received mixed view on this topic because some think that these intangible assets provide very useful information and they want to know more details on these intangible assets. Others says no, management, I want to see all the intangibles included in the goodwill amount. I don't need the separate recognition of these intangible assets. Preparers also says that the measuring this asset at fair value is very difficult to do and is costly because usually they have to ask to valuators to provide to try to measure these assets. Many users are think that it's useful to separate the intangible assets that are tax deductible because they want to know the information about the expected tax expenses. Slide 9 relates to the impairment test of goodwill. Also in this case, we received very different views because some prefer the current requirements and so that the goodwill is not amortized and entities do the impairment test of goodwill because they think that in this way they can user can assess a management stewardship because they can measure, for example, the ROI. Others says that the impairment test doesn't work in practice, is a good principle but doesn't work, and so they prefer to come back to the amortization. In slide 10, we summarize the feedbacks on the accounting for non-controlling interest. According to IFRS 3, an entity now has a choice that is a transaction-by-transaction choice. They can measure non-controlling interest at fair value or proportionally to the fair value of the net asset acquired. We received mixed view also on this issue because some think that we should eliminate this policy choice. Others think that this policy choice should be not by transaction, but should be for all the business combination. From preparers, we also heard that sometimes it's challenging the accounting for non-controlling interest, especially when there is a reduction that is not in the ownership interest, that is not a loss of control. In slide 11, we provide the feedbacks received on step acquisition and loss of control. Many users understand the rationale behind the accounting treatment of step acquisition and loss of control. Otherwise, they say that for some of them, the gain on the remeasurement of the previously held interest or the gain on the interest remaining after the transaction is not a real gain, and so they exclude this gain from their analysis. Slide 12 is about the disclosure. I have to say that many users would like to know the subsequent performance of the acquiree. But this information is very difficult to provide because preparer says after the business combination, after a couple of years, the business acquired is integrated in the entity, and so it's not easy to assess how the acquired business is performing. Also, users would like to have more disclosures on more pro forma disclosure, and they also say that sometimes the reason for the business combination are not very clear, the real reason of the business combination. They would like to have more information on the real reason of the business combination. In slide 14, there is an overview of the next steps that we plan to take. In summary, we want to provide a comment letter analysis to the ISB. We also want to provide a comparison between our findings and the findings of the FAF of the post-implementation review of FASB 143 revised. We are planning to publish our findings by the end of the year, and we also discussing our a staff level our finding with the FASB, and we also plan to think about the how to cooperate with FASB on the next steps of the project. We want to ask you for inputs on the next steps, if you have any comments or any suggestions on the next steps that we plan to take.
Comments? Egbert.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to say that the PIR is a very positive exercise, and in particular compliment the ISB with the broad nature of the questions that have been asked. And I think the presentation also shows that there are broad topics. On the way forward, my suggestion would be that M&A is a global topic, so it seems logical to work with FASB. But I would also think that high quality global standards should be developed with the platform of ASEF, where different national standard setters provide their input including the FASB. So in terms of the convergence strategy, and I think Hans alluded to that earlier, I would be cautious with defining an exclusive relationship with the FASB, but rather play it via the ASEF platform.
Danita?
I agree. This is obviously a global issue, and I think we do have a converged standard now, or an essentially converged standard between the U.S. standard and IFRS. I think it would be a real shame to diverge. I mean, this has been, in my mind, at least one of the real success stories. We've got some differences on NCI, but beyond that, it's largely a converged standard, and I think has worked well. The issues that have been raised to the ISB, as you have well summarized in this presentation, are very consistent with kind of issues that we and others raise to the FAF. And I realize the objective of their post-implementation review is somewhat different than the ISB's objective. It's the FAF that conducts it, not the staff. But that notwithstanding, some of these issues are identical, and in my mind, the definition of a business issue that you highlighted, without getting into technical details here, that is, to me, one of the most significant issues that I think we could make a lot of progress on. And there was a submission to the Interpretations Committee a while ago on some of these issues, and I think it would be great to try to take those issues forward. But taking Egbert's point, and he's absolutely right, I think doing it perhaps under the auspices of the ASAF would be a good thing to do, but I really would hate for us to see divergence with US GAAP on this issue.
Thank you, Danita. Hiroyuki?
Thank you. I have one comment regarding specific items. Under the current IFRS, goodwill is required to perform impairment test, but I understand that some argue for amortizing goodwill on a regular basis at the same time as performing impairment test. We hope sufficient time will spend considering that point to provide a convincing reason to that stakeholders. Thank you.
Jake?
Thank you. echo all of the comments so far. I think in terms of next steps, I would encourage the ISB to apply the thinking that it's adopting in the research project and say, well, is there a clear problem here that we need to fix? And to think very broadly about what is a problem? Is a problem that actually the costs of applying these particular requirements outweigh the benefits derived?
And that was obviously what Linda was going to raise as well, because she's put down her flag. Kumaji.
My last name pronounced as Kumagai, so I think probably you can call me Goro.
That's what I tried the first time, and I got it wrong, I thought.
It's okay. Thank you very much for this. And my comment is rather a general comment on the PIW as a whole. I believe that it is crucial or very important for the ISB to make the post-implementation review as effective as possible. In that regard, I believe that board should exploit PIW results by focusing on correction of the areas where the standards fail to achieve the board's initial intention. I mean, that is quite important. This is quite important or essential to maintain the standards as stable as possible. And from user's point of view, if there is any significant diversity in particularly in the area of disclosure, I hope that the boards should analyze what is the source of this diversity and to minimize that kind of diversity in disclosure. I think that this is quite essential to ensure the comparability among the companies. Thank you.
Any further comments? Sorry.
Just a short comment. And I think the post-implementation review for IFR is very useful, and it gives us a very good chance to do the cost and benefit analysis. According to the requirements of the IFRS 3, all the assets acquired and liability assumed must be accounted for using fair value. And this can be very costly and sometimes very subjective, especially for say, fixed assets and some other assets. But the benefit can be very questionable because even we use a fair value to value all the assets and liabilities, as all you know that the value of business enterprises as a whole is not, does not equal to the sum of assets and liabilities. So we cannot, investor cannot tell how much value from the combined financial statements. So I would suggest that we have a lot of sophisticated requirements and complete procedures in this standards. But we should focus more on cost and benefit analysis in the post-implementation review. Thank you.
Peter.
I tried to solicit comments from UK investors on this, and the only one that came back with some coherence was about the working with the with FASB and convergence. And there was some concern that different legal structures in the US compared to the rest of the world will frustrate that convergence. And I just got these messages flashing up. Convergence, yes, but not at any cost.
Thank you for that. Roxanne.
Yes, thank you. Probably a number of, at ESMA level, we have conducted a study, a kind of post-implementation review for enforcers, and we answer somehow like that in the post, to the post-implementation review of the ISB. Maybe I'll just make a general point, because otherwise our report will be public before the end of this week. It came from our review that actually there are a number of areas which somehow are across the standards, like for example disclosure in IFRS 3 need to, so there is a need of making a link with the disclosure initiative, the amortization of goodwill or not non-amortization of goodwill links to IFRS 36, then recognition of assets and liabilities, like for example the recognition of contingent liabilities and things like that, which might probably there is a need of further thinking on how these areas link with other standards. So potential changes or decision taken might have an impact on other standards as well.
Thank you. Enster?
Yes, thanks. Well, I think that there could be an important source of diversity, lack of comparability with the PPA, the purchase price allocation. I mean, there could be quite a number of different criteria. I think it's important to have quite a disclosure regarding how the PPA is allocated to provide comparability.
Any other comments? Oh, Fumio, yep, sorry.
Yeah, thank you. So Japan is now very concerned about this goodwill, how goodwill will be finalized in the future, because at that moment the IFRS is based on the non-amortization, but in Japan, as you may know, that goodwill will be amortized in within 20 years. So as mentioned here, page 9, that the impairment test is not effective, and also the purchase goodwill may be supported by internally generated goodwill. And also this goodwill is depend on the current business environment for even though we say that the future cash flow is, but mainly based on the current environment. So if we apply that amortization for this goodwill, and I heard recently the FASB also now studying this amortization of the goodwill. So if we can apply this amortization of the goodwill, many Japanese companies will follow the IFRS, I think. I'm not sure, but I think because there are many companies, Japanese companies, are concerned about this, whether we amortize or not. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Rudolph?
Yeah, I just, from a preparer's perspective, I just wanted to underscore what Tanita said before. You know, we should avoid at any cost losing a converged advantage here. I think to go apart with two separate models or somehow let it diverge would be a shame.
Okay, it strikes me. Sue.
Just on that, I agree absolutely with not losing convergence where we've attained it, but that's a two-way street. So, any of you who have dialogue with the FASB, if you could reiterate to them as well, that would be helpful.
Sue, every chance we get, I've said exactly the same thing to them. So.
Single sets, that's all we need. Single set, no more convergence necessary.
You're consistent. Michael, do you want to make a few comments? Yeah.
So thank you for those comments. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me as I look at the feedback we've received so far, and obviously this is based on the feedback we've got mainly from the meetings that principally Leo, but me as well, and some others as well, have participated in, is so it's feedback from the meetings. We've yet to do the detailed review of the comment letters. But what strikes me is the diversity in some of the views that we're hearing. So what we're obviously going to be looking at is the reasons that people have presented for expressing those particular views. So why is it that they find this difficult or that difficult, or what is it that they're also looking for? So we'll be looking at that and also thinking back to, well, what was the board's original objectives, and what does this evidence tell us about having, you know, succeeded in achieving those objectives, or where is it that we need to do some amendments to the standards to try and, you know, achieve what we set out to achieve with some of those, if that's still a worthy objective involved. So appreciate the comments we received there, and obviously the next steps for us will be to present a detailed summary to the board that brings together the feedback from the outreach plus the feedback from the comment letters.
Michael, just in terms of time frame, what is the sort of time frame that you're looking at, if you like, before we get to the publication of the findings and the ISB's response?
Okay, so we're looking at bringing a paper summarising what we've heard through the comment letters and the other outreach in September to the September board meeting. So that's our plan at this stage.
However, presumably to get the responses, I mean, the responses that you're talking about are whether we do nothing or we look to amend the standards. So they're pretty significant type of responses that you might be getting. Therefore, are you expecting to elicit those in one meeting?
I'm not. What we did with IFRS 8 and that review was largely sort of our feedback statement was summarising what we'd heard. We've had some follow-up with the board since then, and in fact the plan is to bring a further paper to the ISB with some ideas about how we can respond to some of the things that were found from that. So the feedback statement at the end of the year wouldn't be a plan for making amendments to the standard. It would be a summarising what we heard and sort of perhaps initial reflections from the board as to what that feedback tells them.
So the issue of convergence that obviously has been talked about quite a lot here is not an immediate issue, or staying the same as the US, it's, I guess is the words I'm looking for, is not an immediate issue.
No, I mean, we will have, you know, ongoing dialogue with our counterparts at FASB staff as we go through this. But no, it's not a case of looking for decisions from the board about potential amendments to the standards before the end of the year.
Any further comment or suggestions that anyone has in relation to this post-implementation review? Okay, thank you, Michael and Leonardo. That's been useful. Thank you very much.